You want to say something, just as you are, don't think, just say it naturally and see if it's recorded now. We are recording. Just say, just tell your name.
I'm Sylvia Davis, Tubular College.
Miss Poole, you're Sylvia?
I'm Betty Ann Poole, age 20, Tubular College, senior.
No, not yet.
Austin Moore, Tubular College.
Memphis Norman, Tubular College, from Wiggins, Mississippi.
I see how we did on that. And then just try to forget it, except for speaking. I don't know where we can begin. Let's say a question like this. What are your expectations of a person who would be, quote, a Negro leader now? Mm-hmm. Anybody?
Well, for my part, I think that in terms of aims or goals or purposes of a Negro leader, I think that it should be a projection, that his projection should be not only thinking in terms of Negroes themselves, but in terms of the entire community in which Negroes and whites live. And I think that the Negro leader should think in terms of the rights of Negroes and the rights of other people in the community, because you just can't take the situation as it is and put something on other people just because of the situation that the Negro is in. And I think that in terms of being a leader, the Negro should think not only in terms of the Negro, but in terms of the whole community complex.
Are you referring to the relations in the community at some future date, some picture of society to come that is the responsibility of the Negro leader to have in mind?
Yes.
That's what you're thinking about?
Yes.
Well, I agree with Mr. Norman, but I would also like to add, I would expect a Negro leader to be logical and cool-headed rather than a charismatic type leader, because I don't like leaders who like to play on the emotions of the people who they're leading, but to lead them through peaceful demonstrations and not by means of violence, because I think that's the only way we're going to ever get in here, and that's through nonviolence.
You know, you find people disagree with you.
I know, but that's the way I feel.
Ms. Davis, what do you have to say?
I agree with what Mr. Norman has said and also what Ms. Poole has said, and especially in elaborating on what Ms. Poole has said. The nonviolent movement has brought us thus far good, I think. And not only this, it has been such a way that people can respect us. If anybody can stand up and fight for things, I mean physically, but it takes a person that has strong emotions to really withdraw from this, and I think this is what the leadership is taking kind of consideration also.
Well, don't wait to be asked. If you want to say something, say it, you see, and you know, it's not a question. We don't all have to speak on a topic, or just as you, it'll be as natural as possible. Assume we are having a conversation.
I was just going to say that this is more or less a human rights movement, more than a Negro movement. I feel that the leaders, Negro or white leaders of our country today, in the Negro movement or in the Citizens Council movement, or the white movement, should take into consideration the heritage of our country and the belief in a form of democracy that we have to have, whereby we have to learn to love each other as brothers rather than a hatred that is created, that has been created in the South.
I don't think it's so much as the hatred. I think it's mostly the whites, some of the whites aren't ready to accept the fact that this is going to happen anyway, no matter what you do. they've got accepted. I don't know whether it's hatred that's embedded within this idea or not, but this is something that's going to happen, and they just hate to face it. Whether no matter how they try and prevent it, it's going to come. And they hate to see it come because some of their rights, they feel, will be disrupted some way, but this is something that has to be accepted.
You mentioned some of their rights might be taken away. What sort of rights you think would be taken away?
I've talked with some of the people that we said more or less conservative, and they feel that if the Negro, some of them feel this way, if the Negro receives some of his civil rights, that they feel that like the government offices, some of their positions will be withheld or something of this nature. They're thinking in terms that we are all Mississippians and that we all have the same rights, you know, and these are to be expressed through votes and this sort of thing. They aren't taking that into consideration this way, just looking at, I'm ahead, and if I lose something, somebody else is going to come along and receive it. This is some of the views that I've gotten from this conversation.
Let me read you a quotation from Dr. Kenneth Clark, you know, the Negro professor of psychology at CCNY, City College of New York. He's been talking about the black Muslims, and now he is talking about Martin Luther King, comparing them. This is a quotation. On the surface, King's philosophy appears to reflect health and stability, while the black Muslims appear to reflect pathology and instability. A deeper analysis, however, might reveal that there is an unrealistic, if not pathological, basis in King's doctrine. The natural reaction to injustice is bitterness and resentment. The forms which such bitterness takes need not be overt, but the corrosion of the human spirit seems inevitable. It would seem, therefore, that any demand that the victims of oppression be required to love those who oppress them places an additional and probably intolerable psychological burden upon these victims. He's clearly no follower of King. Does that make any sense to you? Clearly not. You have said the contrary is your conviction. But how would you answer that? He's saying, to paraphrase it, that the attempt, that the natural response, the natural man's response to injury is to resent it. He may not be able to strike back out of fear or some other situation, but it is natural. If you ask him to forgive, it is unnatural, and this places a destructive burden on him. It will lead to psychological complications and confusions.
Well, I can see where his statement is true because I read John Dollard's casting class on the Southern Tongue, and I agree with his answers to Negroes who have an accommodation attitude when whites mistreat them. And I felt the same way quite a few times when I gone down to demonstrate or just walk into a situation where the color barrier was and I was rejected and thrown out. But I go along with Gandhi and his philosophy where nonviolence is the best technique because I feel that the only way that we can ever really achieve integration through peace and harmony is through brotherly love. And if you fight fire with fire, you know, like violence with violence, you're never going to accomplish this.
But do you think this is making you mentally sick? The plot that will do to you?
It possibly is. Maybe I'm taking my aggression out on members. Well, John Dollard said that Negroes take out their own aggression on other Negroes.
The Saturday night fight.
Right. But I don't do this. Maybe I take it out on myself. I don't know. But I really agree with King and his nonviolence techniques because I want to achieve integration through nonviolence in order to get some love.
If the nonviolent attitude would bring about some psychological confusion or frustrations, would you be willing to make such a sacrifice that the generation after you would live in a society much better than the one that you lived in?
Well, I don't think that it's possible for them to live in a better society than I'm living in now, if we achieve integration through violence. Because there's always going to be chaos and strife between the races if you don't win it over now, as you're doing with brotherly love.
What I meant to say was through nonviolence, if you make a sacrifice, a nonviolent sacrifice, and you did accomplish something, and a generation after you would live better than you live, would you be willing to make a sacrifice?
Of nonviolence?
With
yes.
Nonviolence.
Yes, indeed.
Even with the physical injury and the psychological
I would give my
frustration?
Life.
Yeah.
I really would.
Because I think that's the whole purpose of nonviolence itself, to make a sacrifice.
The sacrifice has to be made. The way I feel about the violent technique, okay, maybe the nonviolence has a psychological effect upon a person, but I feel that if we start fighting back, it would lead into it'd be more. There's less violence when you have only one side fighting. Now, if both are going to fight, more likely they're going to start picking up weapons. There would be more death. And we're trying to eliminate this by the nonviolent technique. I feel that's what King is trying to do in his nonviolent action. And if we have to, if the only way we can achieve our equality is through guns, so to speak, well, just say guns is a reference of violence. I feel that it's not worth it, because our generations will never be able to put the guns down.
As Dr. Abernathy said, this question not from me but to a small group some weeks ago, he said, besides, the white folks have more guns.
Right, there are only 10 million Negroes in America, and if we took our guns and started fighting, we'd be wiped out in less than a week.
10% of the population, which makes it 20 million. 20 million.
That's only 10 million.
Well,
then you have to take into account the small kids and older people. So
I think is Dr. Clark?
Kenneth Clark, yes.
I think what he's trying to say is that, well, it's a natural behavior of man to fight back against physical injury. And not fighting back will with some inhibitions of an aggressive, you might say, emotion, a rage inside of man, and holding us back would cause any frustrations. Isn't that what he's trying to say?
It seems so to me. There's a study made over the recent years, several years, by psychiatrists, at Howard, I think with outside collaboration, studying the effects, the psychological effects on the young people who have been in the sit-ins, nonviolent sit-ins, and scattered over the South, you see. Apparently they found that you had actually the development of qualities of personal integration, I mean in the sense of personal character integration, strength of character, self-control, self-confidence, rather than sickness.
Well, take the example of the demonstration I was in. I was beaten on the floor, and it didn't bother me at all. Not psychologically. There was no frustration or anything like that. I was completely normal afterwards.
You sure?
Well, I was completely normal. And, for my part, it has given me some personal strength, I think, to withstand things that emotional things that I would get emotionally upset ordinarily seem to have helped out some.
Now there are people you tell us. See, sorry, I'm muffing this. As you have a religious and theological grounding for this, this is always a purely a personal feeling. It has nothing to do with Christ's teachings.
No.
This is irrelevant to Christ's teachings for you too, of turning the other cheek, forgiving those who might.
I think that for me there's a tie-in between the two.
There are people, of course, who are completely non-believers, who still follow non-violence, not as a tactic, but the cause of a psychological good. It's another position, of course.
And I think it's also physically good, because I've been in situations where a mob could have formed, and I wouldn't have fought back. I would have been completely non-violent, because if I had resisted, I would have been killed, and I'd rather live and get beaten up and get killed.
Where was this?
In the bus station.
When?
This year. And last spring.
Where was this?
Well, all the way from Mississippi to Tampa, Florida.
On the ride?
Right. I went to every bus station, and a couple of white people made nasty remarks, and like, started forming behind me and standing there staring me down. But I was in a situation once where one boy was beaten up with me, but I wasn't hit because the white man came over and told me that if I didn't want from the same thing, I had better get out. And that was the first time I've ever been in a situation like this. I wasn't even in the movement, and this is what brought me to the movement, the situation.
That episode brought you to the movement.
Right. I saw this boy fall on the floor in nonviolence. You know, and it touched me somehow. And from then on, I was very active in the movement.
Can I bring up another point, Mr. Warren?
Please.
Quite a few people in the movement came to the movement through this type of action. You find that when you see your friend or someone that you know beaten next to you, or even someone just because he's the same color that you are, he is beaten because of a human right that he has inherited through his birth to a human right to do. And you see him beaten there, and you can't do anything, and you feel that you're a coward or you're helpless in the situation. And then to even, for instance, the death of many people, when they kill Medgar Evers and Moore and kids in Birmingham, things like this. Each time the police would bring out a dog to bite someone. This was shown on television. People heard these things. People saw these things. This brings more and more people into this movement. This brings more and more people willing to accept that bite from a dog or that beating from a policeman, so that their children will not have to grow up under such, or future generations will not have to go under the same thing. And that's the way I came into really seeing the problem, whereby I had to find myself, and I couldn't let one person be beaten while I stood around and did nothing. But then too, I couldn't help them, because I was if I would help them, they'd just be violent. And this brings more and more people into the movement every time.
And morally, it looks better having a nonviolent protest than it does to be waiting in the woods in a ditch somewhere with guns and bombs and things to destroy human life.
And most whites seem to, most southern segregationists, or most segregationists seem to think that Negroes are really nothing but cannibalistic savages. And if we started hitting back and fighting, this would only give them more reason to believe this.
and this would hurt our cause. And as for the personal experience, as to what Mr. Moore was referring to, I know that this nonviolent movement helped me quite a bit, because I know if it had been violently, everything had been violently done, I don't know whether I would have been as active as I was being. But seeing people actually beaten and restraining from this, from these physical beatings and all, I said, well, what is my need of sitting back, seeing this happen, and even the day after Mega Ellis was killed, this was my first, this was the first time that I had participated in one of the demonstrations. And I marched with the people down, we were headed toward town. And really, at that moment, it wouldn't have mattered to me what would have happened. Even I was ready, I felt that I was ready to give my life. This really helped a lot. And I think this nonviolent movement was all behind it, I really do.
Let me change the subject. Here's a quotation from Du Bois, written long ago, but there are many modern variants of this same notion that one encounters from Negroes in writing or in conversation. I'll read the quotation. "The Negro group has long been internally divided by a dilemma as to whether its striving upward should be aimed at strengthening its inner culture and group bonds, both for intrinsic progress and for offensive power against caste on one side, or whether it should seek escape wherever and however it can into the surrounding culture." Decision this matter has been largely determined by outer compulsion rather than inner plan. That is something is not perhaps the best quotation of him on this point. That's what I had earlier. He had said the pull toward the sense of the African heritage, the pull toward some mystique of the black, the bond of blood and the common cultural experience, either as Negro in general or as American Negro in particular, is one impulse. But the negritude of the new new African states, for instance, with some. Or, as opposed to that pull, the pull to enter into Western or European American culture as fully as possible, and perhaps in the end have the Negro race lose its identity entirely. There's those who are in that orbit, be absorbed into the general American bloodstream and lose whatever qualities and values that might have been associated with the fact of being Negro. This is this division, these two impulses. Now there are some who feel this is a very deep problem, others feel there's no problem at all. How do you all respond to it? Yes,
I feel that there's no need for me to lose my identity unless unless I was lose my identity from the human race, because I am not a just a Negro. I'm a human being. I have certain human rights. If I feel that I want to stay out of not educate myself to the extent whereby I can accept the bourgeoisie culture of some of the fights in America today, or I have to be superior to them. I mean, I have not superior to them, but I have to bring my educational standard up above theirs before I can be accepted. I feel that this is not necessary. I feel that we have human rights as human beings, not that we should try and we just want what is duly and accepted as ours, as a we want everything that the white race has, not that we're superior to them or anything like this. or we just would like to be accepted on an equal basis?
Well, in terms of different cultures, I would like to look at it in this particular, from this particular viewpoint. We recognize that the sort of culture that you have in Africa is entirely different from that that you have in Europe. This is due to the physical environment and the geographic environment of the two continents. Then we have Negroes being brought to this country in a slave situation. And, well, these slaves never caught on to what we would consider the mainstream of Western civilization in terms of culture of the Western world. And since the Emancipation Proclamation, since Negroes have been freed in this country, being segregated against, we have never really gotten to the mainstream of what we would call American civilization, which is Western civilization. And for my own thinking, the only way that we can have a social system with social solidarity is to have some similarity in values. And we say that we have a Negro culture and a white culture. Values come from the culture. And if we're going to have two cultures, and we're going to have different values. And with different values, we're going to continue to have the dichotomy in a social system. I think Talcott Parsons deals with this quite a bit in terms of values coming from the culture. We say that Negroes want the same things that that whites have. And I think that the reason that we've had so much confusion is that there's a distance between the values that the white and Negro have in this country. And, well, from my own thinking, I think the only way that we can have a social system with solidarity and integration is to bring about some similarity in values.
Well,
Miss Poole.
Well, first I want to say that I am an American, and I do not believe that Negroes should strive for a different culture from their native land. And I think that the Negro's native land is America. If we had different cultures in America, we would have only more ghettos. And I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of integration, although I would not like to see the Negro dissolve into the mainstream as far as race is concerned. But otherwise, yes.
Ms. Davis, do you want to say something on this?
Well, I agree with what Mr. Norman has said, especially. And I'd also like to add that I think we are all Americans. I mean, we, the Negroes, are Americans, as Ms. Poole has said, and that if foreigners can come to the United States and to America and enjoy the rights as the white man, why can't we, who have been born and reared in the United States, do just likewise? I think this has to be considered also, that you don't separate individuals because of their nationality, as some of considering this. We were born and we were reared here, and we are Americans whether they want to accept it or not, and we deserve our own rights personally.
Let's try this one. This is from James Baldwin. The most trenchant observers of the scene in the South, those who are embattled there, and the Southern Negroes, feel the Southern mobs are not an expression of the Southern majority will. Their impression is the mob fall, so to speak, into a moral vacuum, fill, so to speak, a moral vacuum. Does that clear that context? the mobs on the streets, or the mobs in the high school in Little Rock, or in the bus stations that you have seen, do not represent the majority will of the South.
I'd like to say this. I feel that the South, or the mobs, is only a representation of a select, well, I put quotes around that, select few, of the more or less of the lower educated people. I feel that no one in their right mind or with a halfway decent educational background wants violence to occur. You can't say that mob out there is taking Joe Black to the tree to lynch him as a representation of the majority of the population, the white population.
Well, how do they get the power then? Do the police of Jackson represent the majority will of Jackson?
Police represent what they've been taught. They have a job to do. The leadership, has taught them, their leaders have taught them what to do and how to help.
Well, does the mayor represent the majority will of Jackson?
No.
Let's look at it like this now. The mayor is elected by the majority of people. And even Governor Barnett was elected by the majority.
The real majority or the voting, or the majority of the voters?
Majority of the voters.
That's a little different.
That's what makes difference.
You have quite a few Negroes who are prohibited from voting. So,
forgetting the Negroes.
Okay.
I say that on the white side. Yeah. The majority of the whites and so. Now, if this had been said by somebody else, but if it's said, remember, by James Baldwin, it's just anybody who said it, if a white man had said it, if the editor of some newspaper had said it, white editor, it would be a little bit different than coming from a Negro. I never thought of it.
I don't know if it's really the majority of the whites who form, if it's the majority opinion to form mobs, but I think it's because of the power structure behind the people in office. Well, they dictate to the people in office what they want them to do, and as the people in office see to every citizen of the city or of the state, well, this gives the common man his ideas about the Negroes, and I think psychologically, if a person is in a situation where a mob is forming to make a Negro, well, he's still in strong convictions about segregation, and a man from the upper class as well as the lower class will join in and lynch him. And it could be the majority. I think there are a few liberals here in Mississippi and in the South, and I think the most of them want segregation.
Well, you couldn't say that the mayor would advocate violence.
Well, in his speeches, he doesn't come out directly and say it, but subtly, there's an undertone of it.
The mayor dictates the behavior of the police. He's the boss.
And the power structure dictates.
Well, we haven't had any trouble. We've only had trouble, at least in Jackson, we've only had trouble on the streets. We haven't had trouble in the cells too much.
What?
Yeah. People get beat up in jail cells too, by drunkards and policemen.
This hasn't happened.
And girls get raped in jail cells too, by policemen and drunkards. Now somebody has to give them the key to go in.
There have been polls taken on the question of segregation in the South, and sometimes they indicate that the majority of the Southerners are willing to accept integration, or at least desegregation.
I think what you have in the South is that a sort of a community consensus where people just go along with what a few say. Well, I think there's a bulk of the white community which is completely unconcerned about the problem. They don't.
That's wrong.
That's right. They're apathetic towards the whole thing. And whether integrated or segregated, that make them any different. And those who do show some concern, say, for example, if Mayor Thompson and his police do have a control over the power structure, and with the citizen council in Jackson, you're not going to have any white businessman who would take side with the Negro cause because his business is gone. And he stays, we call it a sameness group where people feel consolidated together. And they just follow a general consensus without breaking away from it. And some people say, what the heck to break away from it anyhow? They have more to lose than the gain. And they say eventually the Negro is going to have his rights anyhow. So why should I suffer now for it?
Trust the history.
So I would agree with Mr. Baldwin in saying that it's not the majority of the white people in the South who would take action in mobs against minority groups.
Well, they would take action. Wouldn't go that far. But does that represent their will? Or the will of the majority?
Well, most time it doesn't even represent the will of the majority. Even though if you have, say, a mob of 1,000 people, you might have about 100 people in there who really want to push this. In every mob, there are some who just go along and be in the group.
Well, now there are people staying at home in bed, too. There are people away from there. Say, if you've got the people in this high school in Little Rock, or a small proportion of the physically of the population of Little Rock, the white population of Little Rock. But now, were they fulfilling the will of the people staying at home, or against them? It's hard to know, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, to just inject a little something, often we have students who visit white churches in Jackson. There are only two of the white churches in Jackson that we can enter, and that's the Episcopal and the Catholic. Otherwise, other churches where we're not accepted, there are usually people within the church that will make it their business to stop the students from coming in. And then there are other people in the church that will actually come out if they see the students there. They will come out and say, I'm sorry that you can't come in. I would just like for you to know that this is not the way I feel about this. I feel that the church should be open to everyone. And so there are a few, and there's no way to measure what would really happen if integration of the church took place, what the feelings would be. But in several instances, the places that have been desegregated quietly, there has been no trouble. Some people would naturally look at them with these hate stares, as John Griffin puts it. These hate stares, but then there would be people that would come up and say, speak to them, and in friendly manners. One gentleman even went out of the way to turn around in the church and say, turn to one of our Negro students and say, well, you have a very fine baritone voice here. Friendly things like this. And where there is desegregation in Jackson, there has been no violence. Except in one library and a few bus stations. But where the people are willing to accept it, where they have said, okay, this is the rule now. We're going to allow anyone to come in here who wants to come.
Did any of you feel any irony, any rather morbid comedy, in the fact that the Freedom March in Washington wound up Lincoln Memorial. Is that an appropriate place for it?
I think it was the best place.
Well, kind of.
Still have some hours in it.
I think it was sort of symbolic of the. Some people might even think that it has some significance because of Abraham Lincoln.
Well, what was Lincoln's views on race?
Yeah, I know.
Well, he did emancipate us, and I'm grateful for
but
him for
but
that.
But he still believed in segregation.
I know that, but he did do
this
something
a different
good
time.
For us.
Well, why did he do it?
Well, because of economics.
Because we wanted to hold the country together.
Right.
That's the only
reason. And to keep the state from all the proceedings from the...
Do you find that slightly humorous, to go to the monument, the man who was forced to emancipate it? Where else could you go?
To the White House.
I
know.
I think Lincoln Memorial was a nice place because, in the first place, even though we don't think that Lincoln had these things in mind as for freeing the Negroes when it came about, at least it brought a change, and we were demanding a change. And to represent this, I think this place is the best place to meet. It brought about a change that was different from that was going on this time at the time of Lincoln, but it still meant a different change in the social pressure issue during that time.
What do you think of Robert E. Lee?
He was doing his job.
He was an emancipationist. He emancipated slaves. He didn't believe it at all. It was morally heinous. Grant held slaves, you're going to last even because of the whole slave.
Well, where else could we have gone that would have killed that many people?
I was changing things back to Lee now.
Well,
he was a general in the Confederate Army.
He was a general in the Federal Army, first in the Zionist Commission. He wasn't a general, he was a colonel in the Federal Army in the Zionist Commission. Withdrew from Federal Army, so he's an emancipationist. Had given up his slaves, didn't believe in
it. Yeah, he fought for the Southern cause.
Well, what does that seem to imply? That makes it complicated, doesn't it?
I think it was a political situation. Because, well, if he emancipated his slaves, he graduated from West Point. And, I don't know anything about his life after the Civil War, after he surrendered to Appomattox, but I think...
He became a college president.
Yeah.
Peacemaker.
I think, well, he had the situation of the of states' rights and federalism and, what was constitutional and what was unconstitutional. And... did the North have the right to... Negroes were taken as property of Southern landowners. And I think it in some way took away property rights. And it was an executive affair.
Well, I mean, before the Civil War, Lee is an active emancipatist and believes in slavery. He emancipated a slave. And Lincoln is forced to it by as a war measure, generally agreed. So he was inclined that direction, but he was. There's no joking in this deck. I'm just saying that his two historical facts are of some interest. What do you make out of him?
Humane person. Although, you know, he let his slaves go, they wouldn't still believe that Negroes were inferior.
Well, so did Lincoln, that matter. I wonder, shall I read you about what Lincoln said?
That was an advertisement.
He said this to a committee of Negroes that came to the White House to thank him for the Emancipation Proclamation. I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. Abraham Lincoln, 1863. That's all for you. Beg pardon?
I say Lee was humane.
Both of them were humane men, I think, on the whole.
Yeah, they were.
This subject creates certain problems, though, about things about history, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Not easy. Now, I saw in the paper, the Jackson paper, last Sunday, a thing on Lincoln. You see it? The magazine section, essay on Lincoln. You see that? Mm-hmm. Last Sunday, Jackson magazine paper called Parade, you know, the Sunday paper that the magazine section called Parade. Great tribute to Lincoln. In the Jackson paper.
That's a national magazine.
Yeah, but they don't have to publish things. They always take things out. They do frequently. They abstract things. They have too much trouble to take it out.
Well, as I mentioned yesterday.
You can't conceive it. That's a very popular idea in Jackson.
Yeah. That was a half-page advertisement for the Citizens Council with a big portrait of Lincoln up there, and had the some of the statements that he made in his arguments with Stephen Douglas.
Oh yeah, that same sort of thing. He says the same things. I'm just bringing these matters up to see what you'd say. One thing is this: has there been a change in the world where Lincoln thinks himself as a racist to the present world? I know people who don't think so. I mean, he used to say the white man has not changed.
Well, I don't think he has, because before the Civil War you had the abolitionists, and now you have the...
Were they racist? What do they think about Negro and white races?
Some of them believed in equality of all men, like Jefferson.
Jefferson, well, yes. He was an abolitionist. He was a southern slaveholder from Virginia. he didn't approve of slavery, but he was...
because I think he...
But from different reports and magazines about Negroes and whites, I don't believe that the situation has changed at all, because everybody's going to be prejudiced to some extent, black or white. And back in the slave days, we found a few liberals who were... in favor of letting the slaves go free. But that didn't mean that they believed that they were equal to them.
Certainly did not.
And now you have the same thing. You find some people who want the Negroes to have their rights, but they don't want them to marry their sons and daughters. And most Negroes that I've met don't want to marry their sons and daughters. All they want is their rights.
That's getting a little off the point, isn't it, about the matter of... it may be on the point, but I mean, it's... Because in the theory that you have superior and inferior races, it never crossed anybody's mind, apparently, as one eminent historian says in 1865. It's about 1865 now. There was not a man in the country who was not a racist. It was a white man who wasn't a racist. That's not quite true now, is it?
No, it's not true. Because you have a lot of twice in the movement.
That's a test, is it?
That's what I consider.
The only test.
That's all I know of.
All right, that's a good test. It's a test. It's a conceivable test. I understand that there's sometimes considerable resentment in the movement, various aspects of the movement, to have white people come in and participate.
That's true.
What's the nature of that resentment?
Well, some of the workers seem to think that whites want to do the movement any good, and because they feel that the white man wants to always be superior and give Negroes the direction in which to go. So they want to come in and govern all the actions of the organization. Usually they're the officials of the organization, the whites. So they feel the white man has to be superior, so he comes into the organization to be superior. And others feel that when you go into a rural community where Negroes and whites have this caste system, the Negroes will get afraid and won't like to participate in the movement because the whites are there, and they don't trust white men.
Well, that's a practical matter, isn't it? That a white man can't walk into a black country community and get communication
right
fast. That's a practical matter. That's not a question of resentment because of his presence in the movement.
Well, they want the movement to strive forward with nothing to set it back.
And the presence of the white man is...
They feel sets it back.
Also, the presence of the white man is resented because he wants to take over from
right
the show, is that it?
Mm-hmm. But I'm not in agreement with this. I'm not with all and some seem to think that all they want is publicity in the movement.
White man does?
Yes.
I'm afraid that may be true sometimes.
And for that, I think you have a lot of Negro leaders who want to take the credit themselves for what they've done, what they've achieved, and not to have any, not to say that we did it together, but that the Negro did it.
This is human too, isn't it?
Yes.
You ought to take credit, grab off. We all know that there are certain divisions in the Negro leadership. There's no common ground about general policy, but there are struggles for power, and there are struggles in terms of organizational loyalties, struggles for prominence in newspaper space. So all these things are in two. What does this, how does it affect your own loyalties, your own feelings about the movement?
I'd like to say this about that.
Please.
I have found in working with various phases of the movement that some organizations are very want to receive credit. I can see where it would the good that it might do for them to receive credit, whereby they might receive more money, publicity.
Yes.
And instead of scattering it out, I feel that everyone is striving for the same thing within their own direction. Some feel that direct action demonstrations are not good. Some feel that they are. Some feel that we should fight these things through the courts. Some feel that we should fight them directly. And there are different philosophies towards achieving what we have in mind. It's often said that there's a split in the organizations, the Negro movement. There might be a split in philosophy of how to go about this, but the aims of each organization, I feel, are the same, and that's human equality in all phases. Not only Negro, it's not a Negro movement, or you classify it Chinese or Indian or Puerto Rican or any other kind of movement. This is just a human right that we're fighting for.
What about anti-Semitism among Negroes? How much of that do you observe?
Well, in the communities I come from, and since I've been here in college, I haven't noticed any.
You know, it's a topic that absorbs really attention. Negroes write about it and deplore it, and Jews write about it and abhor it. It does exist. How does it? Well, clearly it doesn't affect the philosophy of the movement, as you stated. But I was curious, if it's observable around here.
I was going to talk to some people that I've met. Everybody has stereotypes, always. And usually when the only anti-Semitism that I hear of is when people are talking about Jews and businesses. They always try to teach you how to get money. Especially in Chicago, the Jews have them. Go down,
Harlem, too.
Yeah.
fact, most of the businesses are owned by Jews in Harlem, I understand. Most of the properties there, rental properties.
I think in our Sunday school, well, in Sunday school classes, you had these things about Jesus Christ was crucified by, well, he was a Jew himself, but the he was rejected by the Jews and all this sort of thing. And then you hear the stories about the Jews not wanting these Samaritans coming through their land, but yet a good Samaritan saved...
Hold it, sorry. End of tape one with students, Octavio College. Resume on tape two.